Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thanks for listening to the podcast. A warm welcome to Afternoons with Bill Arnold. I am the Bill Arnold part of that sentence. I'm so glad you joined me today. We have a great, great hour coming up. You think I say that every hour, but believe me, I do. We've got David Wheaton coming on in just a minute, and then David Runyon's going to be with us as well. So it's the David and David afternoon. It's going to be fantastic. And David and I are going to talk about why the nation has become so embroiled and animated over the Kavanaugh nomination. We're going to dig deep with that. You know, I miss the days when cereals used to fight with each other. There was Count Chocula versus Frankenberry. There was Quisp and Quake. Remember that? And Cocoa Pebbles and Fruity Pebbles. That, you know, that's when people knew how to fight. Those were the good old days. So this country has become very, very venomous with each other. We're not being very loving or kind or any of that. So we're going to talk to David in just a minute. I also want to be very, I want to start with something out of Ephesians chapter 5 in verse 15. It says, "Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise, making the most of every opportunity because the days are evil. Therefore, do not be foolish, but understand what the Lord's will is." We're going to talk to David about that and others and other topics in just a minute. It's 5 minutes after the hour. After a very short break, David Wheaton will be my guest.
It takes time to create roots, roots that run deep. With every passing year, they grip a little tighter to the solid ground that keeps them standing. For 70 years, Faith Radio has been here, sharing the good news of the gospel to help you grow, understand, make an impact in our culture, and share the good news with others. It's 70 years of roots, and our convictions are stronger than ever, helping faith take root in you. Connecting faith to life, Faith Radio.
Your prayers matter and are heard by God. When you pray, lives can be changed. Each week, the Faith Radio prayer team joins together to pray for relationships to be strengthened, finances to be increased for God's glory, for our leaders to follow God's will, and for so much more. Will you join us? The Faith Radio prayer team, made up of hundreds of listeners, receives an email with each week's prayer focus. You can be a part of the Faith Radio prayer team by signing up at myfaithradio.com.
Welcome back to the program. David Wheaton is an author and a radio host, a speaker, and as you well know, a former professional tennis player. And that's just the business side of him. I could get into the personal side, but that would take me the rest of the hour because I'm such a fan. I love him. He has written a couple of books, University of Destruction, Your Game Plan for Spiritual Victory on Campus, and My Boy Ben, A Story of Love, Loss, and Grace. He's also the host of The Christian Worldview. You can go to thechristianworldview.org to check that out. Welcome to the show, David.
Hey, good afternoon, Bill. It's good to be with you today.
Yeah, likewise. You know, the country is just all animated right now about what's going on in Washington with the Kavanaugh nomination. I would love to dig into this from a spiritual and biblical background with you.
Yeah, well, you have to ask the question, why? Because in some ways, it's encouraging to find out that people, so many people are paying attention to this. I think in our very distracted culture, society, sometimes people aren't paying attention to what's going on in these very important matters. So that's actually good news, I think, that so many people are paying attention. But you're right. There's a huge division in the country over this nomination by President Trump of Brett Kavanaugh to fill that vacant Supreme Court seat. And I think there's a couple of reasons for this. Well, one is that everyone loves a good drama, right? There's mystery involved here. There's a sexual element to it. There's drinking. And then, as I said, there's such a division in the country. Some people love Trump. Some people hate Trump. And so anything that Donald Trump does, some people are going to resist and reject. And I think also there's another factor in this too, Bill. This is an appointment for life. This is an important issue. This is going to be the deciding vote on a split court. So on one side, those justices on the Supreme Court that are more originalist, as they call them, more interpret the Constitution as written, as opposed to viewing it as a living, moving document to be deconstructed according to the mood of our times. the originalists are people like Justice John Roberts or Clarence Thomas or Neil Gorsuch or Samuel Alito, those four. And then on the other side, the more the deconstructionist judges who view it more as a living, malleable document are Ruth Bader Ginsburg, Elena Kagan, Sonia Sotomayor, and Stephen Breyer. So this last seat, being that it's an appointment for life, is huge. It's going to decide. You hate to think that people make, justices make decisions on the Supreme Court based on their political ideology, because no one's a D or an R mm-hmm. on the Supreme Court. But everyone knows the fact is it's your worldview that leads you to what particular decisions, where you come down on certain decisions. It is a worldview issue. And I think that's finally why this has animated the country so much, is because it highlights the worldview divide in this country. Not only originalist, view of the Constitution versus deconstructionist, but really I think a key issue here is the pro-life view versus the pro-abortion view. I think that's driving a lot of this. Kavanaugh is known to be pro-life. Those who are pro-abortion are fearful that he'll overturn Roe v. Wade. And I think finally the worldview divide goes back to how more of the traditional America, they consider it to be a privileged patriarchy, white men oppressing everyone else. And I think that element is, as you see from comments of some of those on the left, you get that sense that they feel like this is an opportunity to overturn that, to topple that, for what they believe to be the future, the progressive future of this country, with identity politics dividing people into race, gender, sexuality, and class, and so forth. So there's a lot of dynamics going on here with this nomination.
Mm-hmm. And if we look at it from a biblical standpoint, we can first of all look at Jesus and think, boy, he had a lot of things slung at him. And if you don't get to know God on God's terms, you're going to be accusing God of all kinds of stuff. And he's kind of used to it in a way. So let's just talk about the power of accusation.
Yeah. Well, that's what this is about, really. Underneath it, we can see the power of accusation here, that Brett Kavanaugh has been accused by, Christine Blasey Ford of sexual assault when they were both teenagers, 36 years ago when he was 17 and she was 15. And most people know the story now that, she says that Kavanaugh and a friend came and non-consensually basically groped or assaulted her in a bedroom at a party. And then there's a couple other allegations as well, but have really, I think, been quite discredited at this point now with this FBI investigation. And so, but the power of accusation, Bill, is just amazing. I mean, you think about this, there's been no accusation toward Kavanaugh in at least his career, his working career as a judge. But to go back 36 years ago, and it's one woman's word against one man's word, and this one woman's word has sullied the reputation and the life of Brett Kavanaugh. You just see that this is powerful. One person literally bringing an accusation. Now, it may be true, may not be true. We don't know that for sure. But you can see that there's a huge power to accusation. And this is not the first time we see this. You go back to scripture like you were talking about. There's no greater example of false accusation than Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, he was the perfect Son of God, and yet he was falsely accused by the Jewish religious leaders and others, and he was crucified over it. There's no greater injustice than that. That's a perfect example of false accusation that led to murder, led to crucifixion. Another powerful example that's really actually close, Bill, to what's taking place in Washington right now is go back into Genesis, in Genesis 39, and the story of Joseph being sold into slavery into Egypt. He starts working in the house of Potiphar, who is the captain of the guard of Pharaoh. And he's alone in the house with Potiphar's wife, and she tries to seduce him, and he resists that, and he flees, and he leaves his coat in her hands. And she's so bitter and so enraged that he would resist and flee from her advances that she falsely accuses him. And what happens? He ends up in jail for 2 years. And so what a almost like, very similar situation where it's her word against his word, thousands of years ago. But this is what Satan does. Satan is known as the accuser of the brethren. That's what he does. He lies about believers. And it says in Revelation chapter 12 that he lies. He has access somehow to the throne of God, where he accuses accuses believers to God day and night. But thank God the Bible also says that we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous, in 1 John 2, who is there to say, oh, no, that believer has been covered by my blood. He is no longer susceptible to your judgment for the sins he's committed. Now, I'm not trying to say this is the case with the Kavanaugh, but I'm just saying for believers who are falsely accused by Satan every day, the good news is we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. David, we have faith because of evidence. You know, we have the evidence of God's word through Scripture that we know that Christ died for our sins and that he rose again. And so we have evidence. And that's why, you know, I believe it to be true, and that's why I'm a Christian. But corroborating evidence is pretty important. And I think the Bible is also going to talk about that as well. So I just want to set that table and take a little break. And then when we come back, we'll discuss that very thing. All right? Sounds good?
Sounds good. Yep, I'm good. Standing by.
Excellent. David Wheaton is my guest. We'll take a little break when we come back. More with him in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. David Wheaton is my guest. He is author and he's also host of The Christian Worldview. We are talking today about the Kavanaugh nomination, which is a very delicate subject, but we're looking at it from a biblical standpoint. And David, as we talk about why corroborating evidence is important, what does the Bible say about the need for evidence?
Well, it actually says a lot about that, and there's plenty of passages in Scripture that talk about the need for 2 to 3 witnesses. You look at John 8, even in your law it has been written that the testimony of 2 men is true. I am he who testifies about myself, Jesus said, and the Father who sent me testifies about me. In other words, Christ is setting up this standard based on the Old Testament that you can't accuse someone of doing some heinous crime like murder if there are no witnesses. There's no corroborating evidence to it. 2 Corinthians 13, every fact is to be confirmed by the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses. Hebrews 10, 27, anyone who has set aside the law of Moses dies without mercy and the testimony of 2 or 3 witnesses. And I think that this has been one of the most troubling things about this situation with Kavanaugh is, again, I don't know whether he did this when he was 17 or whether he did not. I don't know. I don't know him personally. I don't know the facts. But the most troubling thing about this whole thing is that there's this hashtag we believe her mentality that came out. We just believe this woman and we have no idea whether there's no evidence to corroborate it, but we believe her. That is not only un-American according to our legal system, but it's really unbiblical for those because of those passages I just read.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is very dangerous for an innocent person to be, again, the power of accusation against someone with no evidence. You know, it's saying, really, you're guilty until proven innocent, or you're guilty and go ahead, try to prove your innocence. But we don't care. We're going to basically judge you on what we think is right. I mean, this ruins people's lives and their reputation. You know, if Kavanaugh, let's say he is found innocent of these accusations, are there going to be any repercussions for those who have destroyed his name and reputation? You know, I don't think there will be. I mean, I think really what's being said by these accusations who say we believe her just on the spot with no evidence is we don't like men. We see that men have behaved badly in certain cases, and there's lots of examples of that. You see all the whole Me Too movement in all of these cases, from Matt Lauer to Bill Cosby and everyone else. We're saying that we don't care about the details of an individual case. We're going to group men together, and we hate them. They can't be trusted. And I think that's a very, very, very dangerous place for us to be in America. You know, if Kavanaugh is lying, he shouldn't be confirmed to the Supreme Court. But there needs to be evidence, according to Scripture, according to our own law, that this is actually what took place. And I think the FBI is trying to figure that out right now. But it's pretty tough when something happened 36 years ago.
Mm-hmm. David, what would you suspect is going to happen with this? Do you think he'll be nominated or do you think it won't happen?
I just have no idea.
Yeah, I don't either.
I think it's impossible to know in this hypercharged environment. I think President Trump last night had some things to say in a kind of a campaign rally down in Mississippi that may not have helped by criticizing the accuser, Christine Blasey Ford. That doesn't help because, again, this is coming down to just a few senators. The Democrats, most of the Democrats, if not all, are not going to vote for Brett Kavanaugh, whether he's guilty of whether he's found innocent. If he's found innocent, they're not really caring about trying to find the truth here, because even if the truth comes out that he didn't do anything, they're still not going to vote for him.
Mm-hmm.
So basically the whole reason this accusation is brought up is to try to convince those who still care about the truth, those few in the middle who could vote either way. There's about three or four Republicans, maybe a couple Democrats, who they're trying to convince that if there's doubt or if there's evidence of him doing these things, they're trying to convince those people. But it's sad to me that no matter what's found out, whether he's found out to be truthfully this did not happen, they won't vote for him anyway because they just disagree with his judicial philosophy. And I just think there are a lot of lessons to be learned from this whole process and what's going on with Kavanaugh.
Mm-hmm. Now, David, maybe we could talk a little bit from a standpoint of if you have young kids or grandkids, what they do and how they conduct themselves and how they're living their life in their adolescent years is going to make a big difference going forward, unlike ever before, because now you've got a digital footprint. You've got Facebook and you've got everything living out on the internet forever.
Yeah, I mean, that's such an important thing to talk about, Bill. Aside from just the power of accusation, like we talked about, what are some lessons that everyone should be learning from this Kavanaugh nomination process? Let me just start out by stating a verse that most people will know from the Old Testament, 2 Chronicles 16:9, which says, "For the eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that he may strongly support those whose heart is completely his." In other words, God is always watching and weighing what we're doing in life. He's watching, he's looking at our hearts. We don't get away with anything in life. We may be able to hide sin from one another and horizontally, but we can't get away with anything before God. And also says in Luke, Christ said, "There is nothing covered up that will not be revealed and hidden that will not be known. What you have said in the dark will be heard in the light. What you have whispered in the inner rooms will be proclaimed upon the housetops." If this is true about Brett Kavanaugh, that he sexually assaulted this woman when they were 17 and 15, that verse really comes to light. Something he did as a teenager when he was a minor, something that wasn't reported for decades until now. You would never think that something like that would ever be revealed and proclaimed and keep this man who's had, by I think all accounts, people have thought he's had an upstanding life as a judge, all of a sudden brought out and would destroy his potential to be on the U.S. Supreme Court. And the lesson here is how you live in your youth matters. When you go off to college, it's not you're just 4 years to kind of sow your wild oats and then you can start following God after that. No, it really matters. It matters not only to God, but it matters for the future of your life as well. You mentioned the internet footprint, Bill. It never goes away. And trying to teach young people, preteens and teens, that what you write on Facebook and Instagram and Snapchat and all the things you do online, it never goes away. The pictures you send people never goes away.
Mm-hmm.
If it can be used against you in the future, if someone wants to use it against you, it will be used against you. And I think there's one or two other ones that if I could just touch on briefly,
please.
Another couple of good lessons is, one thing that's come out through this Kavanaugh hearings, I think it's pretty clear that Brett Kavanaugh, when he was younger, drank alcohol quite extensively. That was really a contentious point in the hearing when he was questioned by our senator here in Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar, about had he ever drank to the point of passing out. And he really didn't answer the question. He tried to turn it around on her. And it really wasn't a good moment for him at all. Instead of, kind of trying to make a rationalization or turning it around, I think it'd been better for him just to say, yeah, you know what I did. I've done that. I did that too much in my youth and I was wrong for that. And now I don't do that anymore. But you could see the power of alcohol here in his younger years. And it goes back to that verse. I think you read right at the top of this half hour where you said, "Be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time because the days are evil. So then don't be foolish, but understand the will of the Lord." Now, the next verse, what's interesting, the next verse says, don't be drunk with wine, for that is dissipation, but be filled with the Spirit. I mean, it's amazing. Like, I've thought over the years, in having interacted with many high school and college students over my book, University of Destruction, you know, one chapter in that book is about drinking alcohol or taking drugs in college. And after all these years, many later, nearly 50 years now, old now, I look back on my own life. I look at the lives of others, and I see that there's no good reason to drink alcohol, period. There's no good reason to drink alcohol. And I know some people listening, oh, well, the Bible doesn't say you can drink. It just said don't get drunk. Well, I understand that. But if you want to live a safer life, if you don't want to take a chance of something like this destroying your life, as it potentially may have destroyed Brett Kavanaugh's life if this thing turns out to be true, if he was drunk and he did do this, I don't think there's any good reason to drink alcohol. Or if you do, you better be very, very, very careful.
Yeah, when I see kids today, and you know, I hear of stories of experimentation with drugs and alcohol. It's still happening all the time in schools, and I'm appalled to think that these kids are having these parties with so much drugs and alcohol. And there's never been a situation where you're in an awkward, difficult situation and adding drugs and alcohol made it better. Because it's weird enough. It's hard enough being an adolescent growing up, right? Just going through that phase of life.
Absolutely.
It's filled with awkwardness, and it's filled with, you know, tests and trials you have to go through. Never is it wise to add drugs or alcohol to that situation and make it better, because it never does.
No, just ask anyone who has been addicted to drugs or alcohol what it was like when they were addicted to it and couldn't overcome it. And they'll tell you they wish they had never taken their first drink.
Oh, absolutely. So when we talk about, you know, how you live in your youth matters, you know, I guess I just would love for you as a parent, you know, you've got a young boy, and, you know, what kind of advice can you give parents if they've got younger kids?
What I try to tell my son, and he's pretty young right now, he's only 5 years old, he's in kindergarten, so I'm not assuming that he's getting this right now. But the bottom line is, you can set up a lot of the do's and don'ts, you know, mm-hmm. do this, don't do that. And I think there's basis for that. But ultimately, it comes down to his heart. We're trying to train him to love God more than he loves anything or anyone else, mm-hmm. and to fear God, to revere God more than he fears anyone else. And so when you have a love and a reverence for God that's greater than you have for anything or anyone else, you tend to want to obey and please God more than you want to please your flesh.
Yeah.
So I think that's really the foundation we're trying to teach him is to have that. Now, it's going to take a lot of time, and we can do all the right things, and it may not turn out well, but that's our plan.
I can picture his diary. Went to Grandma and Grandpa's, and Grandma had me memorize the scripture verse today. David, thank you for being on the show. David Wheaton's been my guest. Go to thechristianworldview.org to learn more about David. We'll take a short break and be back with more in just a minute. Welcome back to the show. Dave Runyon is a guy who knows how to get things done. In 2010, he launched a neighborhood movement that mobilized over 70 churches and 40,000 people in the Denver metro area. He's co-founder and director of City Unite, which helps government, business, and faith leaders unite around common causes. He's also written a book called The Art of Neighboring, Building Genuine Relationships Right Outside Your Door. He's my guest. Hello, Dave.
Hello, Bill. How are you?
I'm well. Thanks for doing the show. You know, when Jesus says love your neighbor, does he mean like generically, or does he mean your actual neighbors that live next door to you?
Well, for most of my life, I kind of thought of that as a metaphor or something that I could kind of choose how I wanted to love my neighbors.
Yeah.
But over the last few years, I've been coming to realize that there's great power in thinking not only about all of the other neighboring stuff that we do, people overseas, the people at work, the people on our kids' sports teams, but also that Jesus might have meant our actual neighbors too, and that something really special happens when you start building relationships based on proximity.
Yeah. So I know the listeners want to hear about this 2010 initiative you had where you mobilized all these churches and people in the Denver area?
Yeah, you know, we had a group of pastors, myself included, that were coming together trying to think about our city and thinking about what's the smartest thing that we could do. If we were going to all serve and act like we're on the same team and be on the same team, what's the smartest thing that we could put ourselves and give ourselves towards in our city? And in order to answer that question, we started meeting with local government leaders. And back in 2010, we were sitting in the room with our mayor, and we asked him that question of, you know, if you could wave a magic wand and change something in our city, what would you change? And he had a lot of great ideas, but at the very end, he just said this in passing. He said, you know, if you guys wanted to have the biggest impact in our community, you would start some kind of literal neighboring movement. And we just like, he was going to move on. We're like, no, go back and talk about that. He had no idea the irony of him telling us basically to do the Bible. But he was thinking about it from a very pragmatic standpoint. He just said, you know, what we're learning at the government level is that the closer that people are in relationship in their neighborhoods or in their apartments, the less weight there is on all the government programs that we're trying to create for people in need.
Yeah,
that was a fascinating thought.
Yeah, we don't think it's our responsibility anymore to show compassion and empathy. I think we figure there's got to be some government program or there's got to be some nonprofit that'll do that.
Yeah, that's right.
So if you think about this commandment that Jesus gives for us to love our neighbors, is it possible, Dave, that, you know, some of the problems that we have in our world today could be solved because they're sitting right underneath our noses?
Yeah, I think that's for sure true. I think as we start to get outside our front door and just do little things to lean in, you know, learn our neighbors' names, use their names when we see them, you know, ask to borrow something instead of driving to the store, ask, you know, that neighbor that has a lawn that's way better than yours, say, hey, what are you doing over there?
Like, uh-huh.
What do you do? You know, as we do those little things, we start to build relationships and connections with the people that live right around us. And as we do that, we start to care for each other out of relationship instead of out of programs. And so that's been one of the big, big takeaways for us over the last few years. And we've seen a lot of fruit from that in our city.
Okay, Dave, talk about the neighboring concept. What do you mean by neighboring? Because I think you're onto something.
Yeah, well, I think Jesus was onto something.
I agree.
You know,
we're just carrying the water really right now.
For me, personally, you know, the pastor, I was so busy doing all kinds of different things. I was sitting on different nonprofit boards. I had all these responsibilities at work. And then mostly I would just come home and crash.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't really engaged with the people who God had placed right around me. And so my friend and I started to do this little exercise with people where we just asked people to write down their neighbors' names. Like just draw a little, in fact, I'll just do this with everybody, you know, that's listening right now. If you just kind of imagine, walk outside your front door and just imagine the 8 closest households to you. So if you live in an apartment, if you live in a condo, if you live on a ranch, you, whoever you are, you have neighbors. Now, if I asked you right now to just list off the names of the adults in those 8 units, how many do you think that you could do? How many can you just from memory, you know their names? Like for Bill, how many do you think you could do?
I just moved a year ago, so I would say out of the 8, I could do 4.
Yeah, that's actually pretty high.
That, oh, okay.
Sadly, even for Christians,
okay.
For Christians, that's a pretty high number. And most of us have met all those neighbors. We've waved to them multiple times. We've even gotten their names a few times, but some of them we've just forgotten them. And so I've just learned there's great power in taking small steps, in learning somebody's name, and then just being curious about what are their interests, what are the things that they're passionate about, and then just being willing to live in a way in which you have enough pace. I'm sorry, we have enough margin. You're living at a pace where you have enough margin in your life that you can just start to take small steps towards the people who are open to it. There's a lot of the people that live around me, they really don't want to be my friend. They're really busy, and that's fine. But there's mm-hmm. a lot of people around me that are, they're dying for something else. They're dying for something that's a little bit deeper than what they have.
Mm-hmm. So the question that must be answered right now is, you're talking about this grid, and if I picture the grid and I think, oh, okay, there's maybe 4 people I don't know, I feel a little bit of shame, perhaps, that I haven't reached out. So what is keeping us from getting to know our neighbors? What's the big stumbling block?
Yeah, well, hopefully, I don't want you to feel shame. I think we should all feel conviction.
Okay.
But the two big stumbling blocks, I think, are time. You know, that's the biggest one. And then fear. I think that.
Fear of what?
When you turn on the news at any time and you see this, you know, this 24-hour news cycle of like story after story after story that are of people that are done some horrible things and that are really broken, that does something to our subconscious. And then when that person moves in next door, that's maybe introverted and lives alone, all these stories go through my head, right? All these excuses of like, I don't know if I want to get very close to that person. Who knows what's going on over there? And I think we don't give people the benefit of the doubt anymore. We tend to think the worst, and we get kind of locked up by fear around what may be going on in their life or how needy they might be.
Yeah.
You know, if we leaned in, what if they actually want to be around us? What
yeah.
would that look
what
like?
If they glom onto you? Then what?
Well, then you have to have some healthy boundaries and keep leaning in. Maybe God wants us to be around people. You know, there's a thought. What if as Christians we're supposed to be the people on the front lines with the needy people in our culture?
Yeah, well, I think that's exactly what we're supposed to be doing. So let's say that there's not reciprocation. We're trying to be friendly, and we drop something off as a hey, nice to meet you, and then there's zero reciprocation. Do we take a hint, or what do we do?
Yeah, I think, and I've had that experience in my life, Bill, where you know you kind of introduce yourself and you get their name, but you can just tell they don't have any interest. And I think one of the worst things we can do is try to stalk them and try to force yourself on them. You know, and I think Jesus talks about the principle of peace, you know, the person of peace, that you look for the person of peace. You look for the people who they reciprocate in some small way. You can just sense that, you know what, they're open. Maybe we could have them over for dinner sometime and, you know, watch the Vikings game or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm always trying to figure out where is God opening doors? And just having eyes to look for those open doors in my neighborhood, and that's borne out a lot of fruit.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like a great idea is to be intentional about praying for your neighbors. And God does amazing things when you start to go to Him in prayer about how you might have an opportunity to connect with them on a deeper level.
Yeah. For me, a great tool to do that was the grid. You know, I just kind of put a little tic-tac-toe board up on my refrigerator. And I just imagined those 8 houses around me. I was in the center.
Okay.
And I just started to write down their names. And as you write down their names, all of a sudden you'll start to remember their names and you'll use their names. And they do. They get inside of your thoughts and they get inside of your prayers. And then oftentimes that's the first step towards moving towards some of the people that are in your neighborhood.
Mm-hmm. So what happens when you don't get a neighbor's name and now it's gone too long and you kind of feel embarrassed? So you call the neighbor, you know, captain or something, or hey, guy, you know, and
yeah, bro,
at what point,
bro, man,
hey, bro,
yeah. All
hey, chief, what's up? You know, what happens when you finally get to a point where you say, look, I'm embarrassed. I can't remember your name.
Yeah. Well, I've experienced this in my own life, especially early on when I first did that little exercise that I just let everybody through. I could only write down both adults' names in 2 of the 8 units.
Okay.
And what I realized is I had met most of them. And so for me, it just meant going and initiating a series of mildly awkward conversations with my neighbors. And I just kind of ate crow and just said, you know, hey, I know we've met 3 times. I know I've lived next to you for 2 years, but I forgot your name. And the worst part, Bill, is when they knew my name. You know, they knew my name, and I had to admit that.
Yeah.
But I think that's the most important quality in becoming a person that does this neighboring thing well, is that we've got to be willing to lean into mildly awkward moments. It's mildly awkward to have that conversation with your neighbor. It's mildly awkward to ask for advice or ask them to help you move something in your garage. It's mildly awkward to invite somebody over for the first time into your home. But the return on the other end of that is huge. And so I feel like I travel around a lot and I just encourage people, Christians, to lean into mildly awkward moments.
Yeah.
And to see what God does as a result.
Yeah. So, Dave, if we do get an opportunity and we're talking to our neighbors, What kind of questions or topics can get us to a, you know, a deeper level?
Sure. You know, I think there's always a progression. In real relationships, they grow organically. And so you don't have to dive in and introduce yourself the first time and then ask them after you've just learned their name if they know where they're going to go if they die. I think there's – and God's really big. God could use that, but that hasn't worked in my neighborhood. I think what I've learned is just taking the next small step, you know, just taking the time to remember, oh, that person's uncle is really sick. Mm. And that's why, you know, there's a lot of people around their house. They were celebrating their uncle's birthday for possibly the last time. And just remembering that and then checking in and say, hey, how's your uncle doing? You know, or to just, you know, you notice that they love sports or they love cars and to be able to ask a question about that. And then I think as you move down the line, just asking thoughtful questions that get you a little bit below the surface. Mm-hmm. You know, to ask somebody, you know, some of my neighbors are a little bit older than us. Their kids are grown. My kids are just now entering into high school. And I just asked, I said, hey, what are you learning about parenting? Or what do you wish you would have known about parenting teenagers mm-hmm. at the start of this thing? And that's a real small thing. It's not some grandiose spiritual question. It's just, but it's a question that's below the surface. Or to ask somebody, hey, how did you end up as an architect? You know, what got you into that field?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think just being the kind of person that can live just a little bit below the surface to ask questions to get you a little bit below the surface, I think that's that next step. And I think you get, you know, you'll get to the place where you're talking about the things that you love, the things that you're passionate about, the things that you believe in, the things that how you think the world works, why we think we're here. I think all of that comes if we just start to live below the surface with others.
Mm-hmm. So if you move into a new location, a new neighborhood, is it better to come out talking like a Christian or acting like one?
Well, I don't know. I think both. I'm not sure. Talking like a Christian for me means somebody who talks about trying to orient my life around the way that Jesus talks about living.
Mm-hmm.
And so being a person that's generous, being a person that's forgiving, being a person that's loving. But I think I would just say this, right when you move into a neighborhood, it's your best chance to start to get to know some of those people. You've only been there for a year. You don't have to have any mildly awkward moments, right?
I don't. No, because I'm the new kid on the block.
That's right.
Yeah.
So being the new kid on the block is an asset.
Oh, very much so.
I think being willing to share about your spiritual life is great.
Yeah.
And I also think part of the genius of the neighboring thing is that your neighbors are always there. My neighbors see me when I have a horrible moment and lose my temper with my kid. And they see me when I have a good moment and my son does something that's really dumb and I don't freak out. And I think that, like, they're always there. My neighbors, they're there when I drive out of the neighborhood and then they're there when I come back.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things that makes those relationships different. And so I do. I think the way that we act and the way that we carry ourselves is really important.
Yeah. I'm talking to Dave Runyon, and we're talking about neighboring. And his book that he wrote is called The Art of Neighboring, Building Genuine Relationships Right Outside Your Door. If you've got a question for Dave or a comment about neighboring and what it's like to what kind of luck you're having connecting with your neighbors, we'd love to hear from you. 877-933-2484. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show. So glad you're with me today. Dave Runyon's my guest. He's the co-founder and director of City Unite. And he's written a book called The Art of Neighboring, and we all have work to do when it comes to building our neighborly relationships, and he's giving us some great wisdom and insight. I also have a caller on the line that wants to jump in as well. Jonah is calling in from Coon Rapids. Hey, Jonah, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. I just started tuning in. I'm on my drive back from work,
nice.
And I don't know if Mr. Runyon's covered this already, but I heard what he said about having an effect on your neighbors and the great the great time it is when you're new. My wife and I just moved into our neighborhood, and we've been meeting these wonderful people, and they've started telling us that we're having an effect on them, which was interesting because we haven't been knocking door to door.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I'm afraid of, like my wife and I have talked about trying to bring one of our new friends to church, for instance, and she's expressed openness, but I'm cautious about like turning it into too intense, too fast of a thing where I could alienate them. And I'm wondering if he has any advice on establishing proper human boundaries when you're trying to usher someone into the most important thing in your life and that you want them to have, you know, very intensely, a relationship with Christ and his church. Like, how do you – is there any proper means for not going overboard too fast?
That's a great question, Jonah. You ask better questions than the host. So thank you for that. Dave, what do you think?
Yeah, thanks, Jonah. I appreciate that. And I have a number of thoughts on this. I think it's a really important question because what you're getting at is posture. And you were asking a little bit earlier, Bill, what are some of the good questions? One of the best questions to ask somebody is just say, hey, so like, did you grow up with any kind of like faith tradition in your life? And that allows the person to kind of share with you, here's the background that I'm coming out of. Sometimes it's a background where they had a really negative experience. Sometimes it's a background where they've kind of had a nominal experience. Sometimes it was, it's something that they've been fully engaged in. And so that's one of the better questions, I think, to begin to bring the topic of our spiritual lives to the surface. And what you're getting at, Jonah, is this question around, I think what you're asking is, how do I do this without turning my neighbor into a project or into a target?
Mm, yeah.
And I think that's the right question. And I've seen this happen, and sometimes it can go wrong because sometimes in our culture, a lot of times in our culture, when a Christian does something nice for a non-Christian or tries to engage them, a lot of times the non-Christian braces themselves for what weird things getting ready to happen to them. And that's because they've had some kind of experience along the lines where they just kind of felt like they got, you know, they were baited and there was a switch. And so one of the things that I've learned, the best mindset to go in with is this, is to know, you know, and I just ask you this question, like if you just knew your neighbor was never going to take a step towards God, do you think Jesus's command to love your neighbor still stands?
Yes.
And for me, it does. And I just found when we go in with that mindset, when we go in thinking, you know what, this is a discipline. This isn't an evangelization tool. It's kind of this contrarian thought. If you go into this thinking this is an evangelist, I'm going to evangelize somebody. Sometimes it doesn't go very well at all. But if you go in thinking this is a discipline, this is a lifestyle that Jesus has commanded us to live, I've just learned that people come to know Jesus all over the place. And they can tell, oh, wait, this is a genuine person who's reaching out to me to build a relationship. And it creates an openness to sharing our whole lives with one another. And so I would just encourage you, you know, I think if you're sensing an openness, I would do one of two things. I would inviting them to your place of worship is a great idea. The best thing you could do is just begin to lean in with them and just ask questions about what they've experienced from the church. Just say, hey, listen, I was thinking about inviting you to come with us to church, but I just don't know if that's weird for you or if you've had any weird church experiences in your past or if it's something you'd be interested in doing. And I think when we come in with that kind of posture, it leads to a lot of good things.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for answering that question. That I really appreciate it. I have a follow-up question, but I don't want to take up time. Do you have time for a follow-up?
If it's a short one, Jonah, because I think this is a great topic.
I'm wondering how much you spoke about discipline, and I appreciate that you showed that it wasn't just a bait and switch. I'm curious how much in the discipline of trying to reach out to our neighbor, how much of your evangelization is a product of personal desire, like that you've cultivated for the good of your neighbor, and how much of it's like a, I don't want to say duty, you know, a sense of cultivated duty and discipline, but could you talk to me about like the desire being a part of?
You bet. I'm just like I'm a raging evangelist. Like when somebody comes to know God, comes to know Jesus, it just melts me. I mean, it's something you're seeing the kingdom break out in such a tangible way. And so I have a desire to see people meet Jesus and to begin to orient their lives around him. and to experience eternity. And so for me, it really is, it's this deep, deep desire that I've had for a long, long time.
And I love the questions. And Jonah, I love your spirit. And if you were inviting me to go to church, I'd probably want to because you're such a nice guy. And
that's very kind.
Well, no, it's true. But there's also a sense of urgency we have in life where you go, they invited me to church and I got saved that day and my life was forever changed. I don't ever want to put put restrictions on God saying, well, I need to give it a 6 months to a year of just getting comfortable before I take action. And that's not the case either.
Yeah,
I agree.
Thank you guys so
You're
much.
You're so
I
welcome,
really appreciate
Jonah.
It.
Yeah.
Have a great afternoon.
Yeah. See, don't I have smart listeners, Dave?
You're right. They ask better questions than you.
I know they do. Yeah, thanks for rubbing that one in.
you pointed that out. You're the one that said that. No, that was great. Those are great questions.
Yeah, because I think, too, how cool it is that, you know, it might be, the time might be right now. So,
yeah, that's right.
You know, I'd never want to put restrictions on God saying, you know, you better let me spend some time with this neighbor before I get real with them and invite them to church. You just don't know what's going on in
their
life.
I think we need to be asking God, asking the Holy Spirit to prompt us. And one of the best, most practical things that we do with people is we just have invited them to say this simple prayer. And it's, God, what's the next small step that you want me to take with one of my neighbors?
Yeah,
and I think
love
if
it.
We're willing to get quiet, if we're willing to get quiet with God and to pray that prayer, he gives us a nudge, a thought. He speaks to us in a way that gives us something practical that then we can go and act out on.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just encourage everybody listening to think about that, to think about getting still with God and just saying, God, what's the next small step that you want me to take?
Yeah.
And then I think the word over and over, it says, it's not just about reading the word. It's about reading the word and then putting it into action.
Mm-hmm. So Dave, speak about just being a good neighbor. I mean, returning the belt sander that you borrowed a year ago and, you know, making sure your lawn is cut and that kind of stuff. I mean, that's just being a good neighbor, too.
Yeah, I think when we as believers, this is one of the best testimonies that we have. You've touched on this earlier. The way that we live, the way that we interact with others, especially the people that are right around us, is one of the best ways that we can show what it means to be a Christ follower. And so I think just being thoughtful and being aware, you know, just being aware of what's happening right around you is the best thing that you can do in your neighborhood. And sometimes we're going so fast, we're so busy, dropping our kids off at every different activity, getting home from work and still feeling like we have two more hours of work to do. Sometimes we live in this way in which we're not able to be aware. I love the word and being just interruptible. Jesus was interruptible.
Mm-hmm.
We see that over and over throughout the Gospels. And I think if we can live in a way in which we're interruptible, good things will happen.
Yeah. Well, Dave, I liked my neighbors until they put a password protector on their Wi-Fi. And then I had to go get my own Wi-Fi. So
I love it.
Thanks for coming on to the show. It's just really been nice to talk to you. And I know this is a topic that everybody is interested in because
yeah.
it involves
well,
all
I'll
of
tell
us
you,
today.
I'll tell you what, Bill. If people want to go and get like a free way to just download a grid that they can put on their refrigerator.
Yeah.
Or if they're pastors and they want resources, we give everything away that we can. And they can just go to artofneighboring.com.
Okay.
And they can check out all the resources that are there that will help them start moving down the line in their own neighborhood.
I am there right now as we speak. I'm going to get this grid. Thank you so much for coming on the
all
show.
Right.
Yeah.
All you right. You betcha. Thanks for having me.
Yep. Thank you so much for coming on. Dave Runyon has been my guest. And his book is The Art of Neighboring, Building Genuine Relationships Right Outside Your Door. You can check that book out. It looks like a great one. We're going to take say goodnight because that's our show. But thank you so much for listening. And thanks to all my guests who were superb and the callers. God bless everyone tonight. Have a great night. I'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.